Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here, another exciting program of Two Guys with Heart. Me and my good friend,
Dave Colonen.
Dave, we do have the heart of gentlemen, and we're trying to be encouragers to our listeners, where we share some of the Bible stories that we're familiar with, and some life's trials and tribulations, and the experiences we have, and what does the Bible say about getting through our tough times? And everybody has them. So that's what we like to try to do, share with our listeners, letting them know that we're just as human as they are. You know, Jesus hurts when others hurt. Remember reading some of those stories? Someone close to you is in trouble. I can tell you that right now today. Have you ever really noticed it? Does it matter to you at all? Everybody hurts somewhere. When others hurt, try to feel it. You are a solution to somebody with a problem. Find them. Listen for their cry. You are their walking life jacket. You hold a key to their lock. Feel it. You see, Jesus did. Jesus did not hide his palace. He was not a recluse. No, he walked where people walked. He hurt when people hurt. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion towards them, and he healed their sick. Read that in Matthew chapter 14, verse 14. You see, Jesus feels what you feel. For we have not the high priest which cannot be touched with their feelings in our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15. You will begin to succeed with your life when the hurt and problems of others begin to matter to you. Let me read a little story. When I was studying this issue, I found a little story that I really thought was very impressive and drew this point clearly. Let me read it, if I may. Several years ago, I was invited to attend a Christmas party for a large law firm here in Dallas. One of the young lawyers told an unforgettable story that night. He was the prodigy of one of the great lawyers of the Midwest. The renowned lawyer won practically every case. In fact, every one of his settlements were million-dollar settlements. The young lawyer simply could not figure it out. The research was normal. The reading material seemed normal. The stack of information we had collected seemed average. Before he got in front of the jury. Then he said this old lawyer would walk back and forth before the jury, and as he talked, a transformation took place on the faces of the jury. When they came back, they always gave his client a huge settlement. That night at the Christmas party, the young lawyer told us how he probed his mentor. He said to him, "You tell me your secret. We watch you carefully. We've read your material, but none of us in the firm can figure out why your juries return million-dollar verdicts. It is a mystery we cannot unravel." The old lawyer said, "I would like to tell you, but you really would not believe me if I did." The young lawyer probed him month after month. For a long time, the lawyer insisted, "It really would not mean anything to you." Finally, one day, the young prodigy was going to leave his firm and go to another city. The old mentor said, "Take a drive with me." They went to the grocery store. The old lawyer filled the back of his car with groceries, and they began to drive out into the country. It had snowed. It was freezing, and the icy weather was cutting, they finally drove up to a very modest, inexpensive farmhouse. The old mentor instructed the young lawyer to help him carry in the groceries. When they got inside the home, the young lawyer looked at the little boy sitting on the sofa. He looked closer and noticed that the little boy had both of his legs cut off. It had happened in a car accident. The old lawyer spoke to the family for a few moments and said, "Just thought I would bring by a few groceries for you, since I know how difficult it is for you to get out in this kind of weather." As they were driving back to the city, the old lawyer looked at the young lawyer and said, "It is quite simple. My clients really do matter to me. I believe in their cases. I believe they deserve the highest settlement that can be given. When I stand before a jury, somehow they feel that. They come back with the verdict I desire. I feel my clients feel the same. The jury feels what I feel." That's a good story, isn't it, Dave? Okay. Jesus hurt when others hurt. I like that story of the lawyers. I don't know who wrote it, but it wasn't me. I don't want to take credit for doing something I didn't do. But it is a very good illustration that when you're sincere and you feel what your family feels, when you feel what your friends feel, when you experience the hardships and the difficulties that are around you, people know it. People know it when you stop and pray for them. People know it when you touch them and heal them and wish them well. The power of prayer can never, ever be discounted. David, in your life as a pastor, you've probably understood many times that you have to feel what your parishioners feel. Do you have any stories you'd like to share with us in that area?
Long before I became a pastor, I was in the road with a different church every night. You just opened up so much in my mind today with that story. You know, one story leads to another one.
Yes.
We went to a little church. You know, it was maybe 100 people. And when it was all over, I said to the guys, I said, why don't we give the pastor and his wife, they're struggling here, why don't we give them 10% of what we do? Count up the record money and the table money, and we'll just put the little package, and let's give it to the pastor's wife. Well, that was really, that made a big hit. And so the next year, they invited us back to the church, and we went. Man, the pastor really jumped on the offering. I don't know whether he knew it, but it worked out that we gave 10% of that offering. And from the table, we gave that again. And we gave the pastor's wife over $500 that night. Wow, did she ever... And the church began to grow and develop, and pretty soon they built a church that had 500, and then they built a church that would seat 1,000, and then they had a couple thousand people. And we went back there sometimes twice a year, and we gave the pastor's wife a check every time we went to that church. He died some time ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and we drove all the way to Canada to go to the funeral. Nobody paid our expenses. We drove all up there. It took us 10 hours to get there, 10 hours to get home, 10 hours to do the funeral. Spent like 30 hours. And you know, the biggest thing at the funeral was when the pastor's wife, her husband had died. She got up and she told that big crowd that she had gotten her check from the couriers every year that we were in that church. And she wanted to say thanks at the funeral because she knew that now that they didn't have another church because her husband died, she probably would never get it again. But she, for the last 25, 30 years, we were there. We went there every year. We didn't ever miss. We went twice if we could. And the pastor always said, I don't know what your biggest offering is, but if you'll tell us, we'll get it bigger tonight so that we will be the number one church in all the giving of the years. And we said, oh, good for you. Good for you. And your wife will get 10% of everything that we do. Well, we got the place where we sold not pictures and little songbooks for a buck. We were selling albums and CDs. And she was doing well by us. And she, every time we saw her, said, I'm excited that you're at the church tonight. I know I'm going to get a check before it's all over.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't thought of that story for a long time. It's a memory that a guy like you brings me out of that, because you set in motion so many things that I have been privileged to do in my lifetime, starting so small, starting just on a whim. Hey, let's give the pastor's wife 10% tonight. Yeah. And, it wouldn't have been $100 with that little crowd. But over 30 years, he built the church to thousands, and the offering got to be thousands.
It's amazing.
And her check got to be thousands. So it was good.
Isn't that
it was
wonderful?
Good. Yeah, those are great memories. And if you called her today, she lives in California all by herself.
Yeah.
She would say, the couriers, oh, they're some of my best friends.
Yeah. Yep. Some things that just staggers the imagination to see how strong Christian love is, something that money can't buy. And that's what you established with these people. Even in another country, the carriers are to be God blessed forever. Mm-hmm. You guys have proven that you are true gentlemen. Jesus would be proud of your accomplishment and the way you have done your work. You are a good representation of us. Thank you for doing that. Jesus was not afraid to show his feelings. You and I have emotions that run wild. Jesus was the same way. His emotion would dictate world events. An angel could do the same. An angered world leader attacked another country. Angry airline employees have a picket line at airports. And a mother whose child was killed by a drunk driver launches a national campaign. Thousands are rallying to stop abortions of millions of babies. You see, feelings do matter in life. And that's what we're talking about here, the feelings of people and how we can sense their feelings in our lives. In business, feelings are contagious. When a salesperson is excited about a product, the customers feel it, and they are influenced by it. Jesus was not afraid to express himself. When he was infuriated, others knew it. And the Jews' Passover was at hand. And Jesus went up to Jerusalem and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple and poured out of the changers' money and overthrew the tables. Read it in John chapter 2, verses 13 to 15. Jesus was upset. Jesus was deeply moved with compassion when he saw the multitudes wandering aimlessly without direction. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted, and they were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherds. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. You see, the Bible even records that Jesus wept openly. And when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it. Luke chapter 19, verse 41. And I'm not speaking about an uncontrollable temper. Neither am I referring to someone who sobs and breaks down every time a problem occurs in their life. No, rather I am asking that you notice Jesus did not bottle up his emotions. He was not a robot. He was enthusiastic when he saw the demonstration of faith. He wept when he saw unbelief. Peter, his disciple, was affected by it. The Apostle Paul was set on fire by it. They changed the course of history. Be bold in expressing your opinion. Feel strong about things that matter in life. You can be a marvelous influence for the good. You will always be drawn to people who are expressive. Thousands scream at rock concerts, football games, and world championship boxing matches. Don't be a spectator in life. Get in the arena. Jesus did. Become involved with your friends. David, you almost feel like a cheerleader sometimes when we read these scriptures and we talk about how excited Jesus became and how involved he became in the lives, both on the positive side and on the negative side. You know, there's a lot of lessons learned there, isn't there?
You know how we do it better than ever?
How's that?
We do it by praying a simple prayer.
Yeah, that's right.
Praying is important to we who are responsible for so many things. Being a part of this radio station, we have great responsibility to be able to present it right and to be able to influence people. And we got to pray. We got to pray about it. And maybe we have a moment. I'd like to just share a little prayer.
Prayer right now. Thank you, Dave. Do that.
Lord, I know that passion and enthusiasm for life are the way to success. Help us to find and direct our passion, God, your passion and your enthusiasm into our lives. Teach us to be bold in expressing godly opinions and feelings. Train us to be a player. We don't want to be a spectator. We want to be able to talk in ways that people will be moved in their thinking and in their hearts. And that when they're sitting there and our stories come out of our very being, that you will project them into life that would be so different from yesterday. Make today great for our friends and make tomorrow even better. And we pray this simple prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
And amen. Thank you, my friend. You are definitely a man of God. Let's move on. Change gears if I might want to. And I want to talk about the power of the word habit. H-A-B-I-T, habit. One of the most powerful words in the English language. I want to try to explain to our listeners how important that is. Do you ever hear that set of tapes in the books called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? I used to play that set of tapes over and over and over many years ago. Well, people don't even use tapes anymore. I guess they use CDs. In fact, even CDs are becoming obsolete now, aren't they? Well, you can still read the books or listen to the tapes or play the CDs or however about The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Great men simply have great habits. I might say great people, not necessarily men alone. And great people simply have great habits. That's a powerful word. A well-known billionaire said, "I arrive at my office at 7 a.m. It's a habit." Recently, a best-selling novelist who had sold over 1 million books said, "I get up at the same time every morning. I start writing at 8 a.m. and I quit at 4. Each afternoon, I do it every day. It's a habit." Habit is a gift from God. It simply means anything you do twice becomes easier. It is the Creator's key to helping you succeed. Jesus stayed busy. He traveled. He prayed for the sick. He taught and ministered. He supervised the disciples. He spoke to large crowds. However, he had an important custom and habit. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And in his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up to read. Luke chapter 4, verse 16 reads just that way. Daniel prayed 3 times a day. Read it in Daniel chapter 6. The psalmist prayed 7 times daily. Read it in Psalms 119. The disciples of Jesus met on the first day of each week. Read it in Acts chapter 20. Jesus knew great men simply had great habits. Great habits can make you. Great habits can break you. Boy, we could talk a lot about the word habit, but I think it's enough to let people understand the sensitivity of the word. Habits can be good or habits can be bad. It's up to you to form the habits of your life. Most of what we do, even eat, even say, is a habit because we do it again and again and again. Any thoughts on that word, David?
Sometimes you have easy days and weeks and years. Other years, pretty bad. You get sick, or you get you don't even know what's wrong with you, but life slows up, and you can't. You blame it on your age. I learned so much in the last month, Giff, about my life.
Yeah.
Because for about a year, I was up and down, up and down, up and down, to have a good week and a bad week and a good week and a bad. And habits, you almost destroy your habit when you get that way.
That's right.
And one day I was going to church, and I fainted while I was driving the car. I didn't go totally out, but it blurred my vision for a moment, and it was over. And I went to church, and all of a sudden I was standing in the foyer, and it came again. And then I sat down in the office, and I had about 15 in a row trying to faint.
Fainting.
I'd get so far, and then it'd all leave, and I'd be okay. And finally, my daughter came, and the nurses from the church came, and it was a funny thing. It was a fun thing. The lady that came in as a nurse, she was the woman who was in charge of the baby department in the hospital and delivered like 25,000 babies. And when she came in, I said, "Barb, I'm not having a baby. I'm a man." But I went to the hospital. They said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm fainting." They said, "You need a pacemaker."
Wow.
And so the next day, I had the operation, got a pacemaker right here in my shoulder, and my life has changed. I'm back to being a habit person again, because I feel good. And when I am ready to have a downturn, and my life is going down till something happens, now my life is straight across.
Wow.
And I'm back to habits. I'm back to having fun. I'm back to doing what I want to do. I'm back to life.
Good old Dave is here again.
And if people say, "Dave, you're different." Yeah, I got my strength back. I got my I got my energy back. I got my want to. I want to be this. I got another 20 years of my life. I might make it to be 100.
Yes. Wow. That's a wonderful story.
So,
and you're eating. You're gaining some of your weight back that you had lost?
I've already gained 10 or 11 pounds.
Have you really?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
And
yes.
So if anybody's wondering, what's the matter with you? Why are you sick and one day and good the next? Maybe you need a pacemaker.
Maybe you need a pacemaker.
I could sell pacemakers all day long because of what's happening to me. Everybody sees me and says, what's happening to you, Dave? I said, "I got a pacemaker." Oh, that's the difference. Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's true, though, isn't it? It is that Murray remarkably true.
Right. I can go back to doing things
knowing
that tomorrow I'll feel good. I can get up at the right time, and I won't feel like, "I don't want to get out of bed."
Yeah.
This is done with that. I'm up and at 'em. Yes, give me that coffee. Let's go.
I am really believing your story, because you realize my mother gave me the same story when she had a pacemaker put in. She said she felt so much better, but she was angry with her doctors because now that she had a pacemaker, she was no longer allowed to ride on her lawn tractor and mow her own lawn. Somebody else has to mow her lawn for her now because she can't have anything that's going to vibrate a lot to upset that pacemaker.
Well, my family comes over and says, "Dad, you're done mowing. You're done mowing. I have four acres."
Yeah.
Well, but man,
you're not gonna mow it when you're 82.
No, I've already mowed it. I've already mowed it twice.
Have you?
Yes. They're not gonna take that job from me. I got the habit back. I love to mow. So I'm out there and it's, Dad, we don't want you out there in that mower.
Yeah.
No, you had a pacemaker.
Well, if you're walking behind the mower, I won't say anything, but if you're on a tractor, I'm going to tell you that your kids are right.
No, this week I'm starting to play golf.
Are you? Well, that's okay.
I mean, everybody tells me, "No, you can't play golf for a couple months, 3 months, next year."
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to the doctor this week, and that's the first thing I'm going to ask. Hey, how about golf? Can I play golf?
Right. Good for you. It's just amazing, isn't it, the experiences that the Lord leads us through. And sometimes we have to go through hardships in order for us to really super appreciate what the Lord can do for us. We simply have to ask. With modern medicines available, you know that they can do, doctors can do just about anything if you ask. So, David, I appreciate your sharing your stories of your pearls of wisdom mean a lot to us. You are a great inspiration to our listeners because they, too, can feel your energy in your words, and they know what you're saying is truthful. And I am very, very pleased that you are part of this program. But for now, for today, we must say goodbye. It's been good having you with us, and we must say a sincere goodbye to our friend Carla De Jesus, has been our engineer for years, working with Dave and I. She is moving on to greener pastures, and this is the last day we'll have with her here together at the radio station. Carla, we want to say good luck to you, and thanks for being with us. You're a part of us that will never be forgotten. David, bye-bye for now, my friend.
Hey, goodbye, Carla. We'll miss you. If they ever throw you out, we will let you come in. But I know they won't throw you out. I'm saying goodbye to you. Probably never see you again. Who knows? Anyway, till the next time, God bless. Bye-bye.